We have come to another stage of Christ's trial. We went through His Jewish trials before the high priest, the council, the Sanhedrin, and now we've come to His trials. There are several stages of those. He sees Pilate. We talked about that last Sunday morning. Now He's going to see Herod. And that is found in Luke chapter 23, verse 6. Luke chapter 23, verse 6. And Jesus teaches us an incredibly important lesson in these few verses. Luke chapter 23, beginning in verse 6. Now this comes right after Pilate. The people were accusing Jesus. This is verse 5. He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place. So the people bring up the word Galilee. And so in verse 6, when Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. Now, why would he be so willing to let Herod see Jesus? Yes?
Even though he's a ruler, he's in charge of everything, he doesn't want to ruffle any feathers, so he just can't ruffle somebody else. He wants to be somebody else's problem. It won't be his problem.
Yeah. People haven't changed, have they? See how people in the first century act just like they do today. And that's what he was doing. You know, he was trying. It was obviously an obligation he had. But he thought, well, here's a way where I can kind of get rid of my responsibilities and pass them off to someone else. And he wouldn't make anybody mad. If Herod made the decision, that was great. That's what he wanted. And that's, of course, what he's going to do. So, now Pilate and Herod were both in Jerusalem. Of course, it's Passover time. That's why they're there. Neither one of them lived in Jerusalem. But because of this, you know, this big feast when, you know, thousands of people would be in the city, then both Pilate and Herod were in Jerusalem. So they were there for a special reason or for a special cause. So, verse 8, now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him, and he hoped to see some miracle done by him. So he wanted to hear some spiritual truth, didn't he? He was wanting to hear a good religious message. Now, he wanted to be entertained. That's why he wanted to see Jesus. He had heard about all these things Jesus had done, you know, the various miracles and signs, and he had healed people and, you know, turned, fed thousands of people with just a little bit of food and done all these things. So he wanted to see his own personal miracle. He wanted Jesus to entertain him. I think people are still the same way. You know, it's amazing how people have not changed. Man, if you want to entertain people, if you want to do something to make people feel good or laugh or build up their self-esteem, I mean, people will come in droves. I mean, that's so apparent. Yes, Charlie.
For some reason, 8 million people a year go to France and spend from $50 to $300 a piece. You could get them into a gospel meeting.
If you paid him that much. Yeah. That's very true. And that's the way Herod was. He just wanted some entertainment. He wasn't used to people doing miracles for him. So here he had a chance. Jesus was right there. So here was his big opportunity to have this great entertainment. And Jesus teaches a tremendous lesson. Let's read on. Verse 9, then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. Jesus not only wouldn't perform a miracle, He wouldn't even talk to them. Now, what a lesson is that for us? Jesus could have got out of that situation real easy by just performing a little miracle or two. Nothing. At all. Wouldn't give in a tiny bit. Yes.
Sometimes you say more with your mouth shut than you can with
it. Yep. Jesus refused to do to satisfy his fleshly desires. And that's all it was. He just had these fleshly desires and Jesus refused. That's not what miracles were for, were they? That wasn't the purpose of miracles. And Jesus wasn't going to perform a miracle just to entertain Herod. You know, I don't know why people today don't understand that. You know, that's not what we're here for. Is to entertain, to provide recreation and those type of things. That is not the purpose. That's not why we're here. We're here because we're to worship God, not to be entertained. And of course, Jesus obviously knew that at that time. But again, the places that have, you know, large numbers entice people through entertainment. They might have an orchestra, or they might have a clown, or they might have dancing, or they might have, well, the list just goes on and on and on. And that appeals to those, you know, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life that 1 John talks about, chapter 2. It does that. It appeals to that. And so that's what people want. And unfortunately, other people will see all those people going, you know, to some congregation, some church somewhere, and they'll think, wow, that must be the place to go, is because that's where everybody's at. Yes, Ian.
Herod was actually wanting bragging rights. He wanted himself to be esteemed because if he could go tell people he saw Jesus did this miracle, that put him in a category different than ordinary people.
That's right.
Romans.
Absolutely.
He was wanting it for his benefit.
Yeah, it was all selfish. Very, very selfish. Yes, Charlie.
The tendency to entertain, to party, to have a good time. And there's nothing wrong with partying, having a party or a good time. But it's certainly looked at restrictively as any part.
That's right.
It's part of the human nature. From Moses came down the mountain.
Yeah.
The Israelites.
That's a good example. Yeah.
And it couldn't even keep propriety straight for 30 days.
Yeah. That's right. It takes self-control, self-discipline, and keeps it takes us focusing on God and not ourselves. If we focus on ourselves, then that's what we're going to want. We're going to want entertainment and we're going to want those desires, you know, fulfilled. But if we focus on God, then everything changes. Everything changes when we focus on God. And of course, Jesus had a mission, and so he was focusing on his mission. You know, he was focusing on doing God's will. That's what his focus was. That's what his mission was. And so he wasn't going to be deterred by some authority wanting to have a miracle performed. That wasn't going to deter him. You know, early in his ministry, you know, when a lot of multitudes were following him and he told them some things that were difficult, and a lot of people turned away from him, decided not to follow him anymore. He basically told his apostles, let him go. Let him go because they're not following for the right reason. Yes.
What I was going to talk that when we worship, we are the performers. We have an audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
God.
That's right.
And so when we pray and we sing and we pray, those are all entertaining God.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
If you keep that in mind, mm-hmm. when you reverse it, see, it's all wrong.
It is. That's right. When you reverse it, it's completely wrong because it's all about God. Everything is about God. And it's not about, you know, satisfying our desires, but it's all about God. And that's where so much has been completely reversed in our society. It's just, now it's all about man. Yes?
So many religious organizations have switched God around to suit themselves rather than switch themselves around to suit God.
Yeah, that's just turned it completely upside down. And Jesus teaches us here what we're to be about, our focus. It's about God and about doing His will, not about us at all. So, we'll see what happened back in Luke 23. Well, after Jesus answered him nothing, then verse 10 says, "And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. Then Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. And that very day Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with each other." Now how sad is that? What a sad commentary on religious leaders and authorities, and you know how they had a common enemy now in Jesus, and so they treated him with contempt, mocked him, put this robe on him, and sent him back to Pilate. And like I said, what a awful account that is of how low men will stoop. And they will. You know, they stoop low. Oh, yes.
He had a tantrum. He didn't get what he wanted.
That's right. He had Jesus right there, and Jesus wouldn't perform for him. And so he just threw a little fit. Threw a little fit. Again, people do the exact same thing today. And of course, I'm not talking about little kids. These are adults here that were doing it. These were adults that they didn't get what they wanted. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's very true. It is. Yeah, that's quite a friendship, isn't it? Yeah. Well, now he goes back to Pilate. So he went to Pilate first, then he went to Herod. Now he's back to Pilate. It is starting to get close to sunrise. Remember, I said something, most of these started around midnight. These various trials before. Caiaphas and so forth, and then to Pilate, and then to Herod. And so by this time, it's getting closer to sunrise. It's not quite sunrise, but it's getting closer. And this next account is found in all four accounts of the Gospel. Some of them have more details than others. Some include certain details, the others don't. So we'll try and get everything that's here for us. Let's look at Matthew's account for a moment to start. Matthew 27. Verse 15. Matthew 27, verse 15. Matthew 27, verse 15 says, "Now at the feast," and then this is Passover again, we're still talking about, "the governor was accustomed to releasing to the multitude one prisoner whom they wished. And at that time they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas." And Luke's account says that he was bound. He had been part of an insurrection, a rebellion. Josephus talks a lot more about it, but as far as the Bible, that's some of the things we know about this Barabbas, and we find out more about him later. So he was a very notable prisoner, one that people knew about, because he had been involved in things that a lot of the people knew about. So he wasn't just some unknown little robber or something. Then he says, "Therefore, when they had gathered together, Pilate said to them, 'Who do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ. And what Pilate had done, Luke's account says he had called together the chief priest and the rulers and the people. So he had called together a large number of people now, mainly the rulers, the authorities again. And he's wanting to know, who do you want me to release? But it was very common at that time for the governor to release a prisoner. He says, as it was a custom to releasing to the multitude one prisoner whom they wished. And so that's what he did. That was his custom. And apparently, from what I read, it was a custom in a lot of places for people to do that. So he's just following a custom, whenever this custom was started, to kind of bestow honor, I guess you'd say, on certain occasions by releasing a prisoner, the one that they wanted to have released. And so that's what he's doing. It was kind of I guess you'd almost call it a gift, especially to the Jews here, to have somebody released. So he called together the Jewish leaders and asked them, okay, who do you want to have released? Usually the custom was, from what I read, that the people could bring up anybody's name. But notice that's not what Pilate did. He narrowed it down to two choices. That's usually not how it was done. So he said, okay, here's your two choices. It can be Barabbas, this insurrectionist, this rebel. And we find out he was also a murderer and so forth. But anyway, Pilate made the choices for them. He didn't allow the choices to be made. He says, okay, here's your two choices, Barabbas or Jesus from Nazareth. So he narrowed it down for them. So they had to choose between the two. Yes, D.L.
Remember, this wasn't the general public. This was still the same control group of people that arrested him.
Chief priests, the rulers.
It's the ones that intent purpose to have him.
Yeah. And they were gathered together, still this council of religious leaders that we've been talking about for several weeks. let's read Mark's account for just a moment. Mark 15. Mark 15. Let's see. See what verse it is. Verses 9 and 10. Mark 15, verses 9 and 10. Well, actually, let's go back to verse 7 because it talks about Barabbas. And there was one named Barabbas who was chained with his fellow rebels. They had committed murder in the rebellion. So he wasn't just a rebel or an insurrectionist. He was also a murderer. Then the multitude, crying aloud, began to ask him to do just as he has always done for them. Remember, Matthew's account said this was his custom. So here the people still, they knew that this is what he had done usually during Passover. So Pilate answered them, saying, do you want me to release to you the King of the Jews? For he knew that the chief priest had handed him over because of envy. Because of envy. That's why he ended up being crucified, right? That's what the Bible says. He was crucified because of envy. The chief priests, the rulers, you know, these chief Pharisees and scribes, they were envious of Jesus. Now remember, it was just a few days prior to this. I know as far as our study, it seems like months ago. But just a few days before this was when Jesus rode into Jerusalem, you know, his triumphal entry, and people gathered along the roads and shouted and hollered. So it was a very great day. And that was just a few days before this. And we have to remember, that was just a few days before this Friday morning. And now, these chief priests are saying, you know, now we're envious of them. You know, we see what the people, if left alone, if they won't listen to us, what they'll do. Yes.
Of course, that was Pilate's observation. He
That's right. He knew that.
And something happened in the week when he was very concerned with people. He said, you brought this man to me as one incites people to rebellion. Behold, having David came before you, I found nothing, and nor have Herod. He sent him back there. And the only thing he said to either one of them is, as you say, that both of them found him not guilty, which
that's right.
He didn't say a word.
That's right.
So they both knew that it was just the people. Both said he wasn't guilty.
That's absolutely right.
And yet, they yield to him because they want to look good in the public eye.
Yeah. And these were supposed to be, both Pilate and Herod, like judges in the sense of they were supposed to be able to examine the evidence, see what the truth was, and make the right decision. Not based upon emotions or feelings or pleasing the people. So again, we see that they're a lot like people today. Do the same thing.
Their decision, they had decided that he wasn't guilty. They did decide that, and they say that. But
then they give in.
Which one do you want?
Yeah, that's right. See, and that's, again, it's like so many people today. You know, they didn't have the courage. They knew that he wasn't guilty, but they wouldn't stand behind it. They still gave in. And how, again, what a sad commentary on, you know, the lack of backbone that these men had. They just had no courage whatsoever.
Well, there again, they could care less on the Jews that killed each other. They really didn't care.
Yeah.
It hadn't been a Roman citizen, it would have been a whole lot different.
Oh, yes. Most definitely. Let's go to Luke's account for just a moment. Let's see, verse... Let's see... Verse 18, let's go back to Luke 23, verse 18. Then they all cried out at once, saying, away with this man, and release to us Barabbas, who had been thrown into prison for a certain rebellion made in the city and for murder. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, again called out to them. But they shouted, saying, crucify him, crucify him. Then he said to them the third time, why? What evil has he done? I found no reason for death in him. I'll therefore chastise him and let him go. Now he's thinking, well, if I just do a little bit to him, that'll satisfy him, and then it'll all be fine. So I'll just chastise him some, and then let him go. But that was not good enough. Nothing was going to be good enough this side of death. I mean, that was the only thing they were going to accept. So, but they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and the chief priest, there's the word, prevailed. It prevailed. So they're screaming and shouting and being relentless and saying, crucify him. That's what did it. That prevailed over truth. Because Pilate knew the truth. It wasn't about the truth. He saw how demanding, the verse says, how demanding they were, that they wanted Jesus crucified, and they didn't care. They just wanted it done. You know, that shows the hatred and the malice, the anger that these people had toward Christ. I mean, it was severe. And so they weren't going to let anything interfere with them killing him. Yes. Envy. See how far envy took them? They were so envious that they, you know, they were beyond reason. They were beyond any of that. They were beyond caring about the truth. They were beyond obeying the law of Moses. I mean, they didn't care if they disobeyed God or not. That's how far envy took them. This was all strictly forbidden, what they were doing, and yet they were doing it anyway. Strictly forbidden. Envy. So Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they requested. So he just gave in.
Political and social compromise.
That's exactly what he did. He knew the truth, like was brought up. He knew exactly that Jesus had done nothing wrong. and he should have been released. He said that at least three times. Pilate said that at least three times, that there was nothing, there was no evidence that Jesus was guilty of anything at all. But that, you know, those religious leaders just demanding over and over and over. They wouldn't listen to reason. They got carried up, carried away. Yes.
And the only testimony he got was the charges they brought, and he said, we find no guilty. So he dismissed everything they said.
Yeah, absolutely, he sure did.
He could tell just from the envy of what they were just saying, whatever they thought would take to get it done, and eventually he gave in and let it be done.
Yeah. That's what it did. Again, it goes back to the courage and the backbone. He just wouldn't stand up for the truth. He should have, because that was his job. He wasn't doing his job. His job was, again, to hear the witnesses, the testimony, the evidence, and see what the truth was. Well, he did that. He knew what the truth was. Yes. Yep. Yep, that's very, very true. That's a good point. Well, let's go back to Matthew's account. He includes something about Pilate's wife. Matthew 27, verse 19. Matthew 27, verse 19. While he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, have nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him. So you know how bad the situation was. He wouldn't even listen to his wife. That's how bad the situation was. His wife said, don't you dare do anything to that just man. He knew what the truth was, and what happens? He doesn't listen to the truth or his wife. He still goes with those people who were persuading the multitudes, the next verse says, that they should ask for Barabbas and destroy, Matthew's account says, destroy Jesus. Destroy him. The governor answered and said to them, which of the two do you want me to release? They said, Barabbas. Pilate said to them, what then shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ? Pilate includes his description, the biblical description of Jesus is the Christ, the anointed one. So Pilate even includes that in the description of Jesus. The one who's called the Christ, the one who's called the anointed one. What's the deal? And they said, let him be crucified. Yes.
That's significant, the punishment that they wanted to have, because, you know, Herod cuts John the Baptist's head off.
Yeah.
And so he could have beheaded him or anything, but what's the prophecy say?
Yeah. That's right.
And this is the punishment they asked for.
Yeah, exactly. So he says, what evil has he done? But they cried out all the more, saying, let him be crucified. See, they had turned into a mob, hadn't it? There was a mob mentality at this point. They didn't care about the truth. They didn't care about anything but crucifying Jesus. So when Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather that a tumult was rising, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it. And all the people answered and said, his blood be on us and on our children. On us and on our children. It's interesting that Pilate does the hand washing, because that was actually something that had been practiced for a long time, even among the Jewish people. I don't know if I wrote down where that was found. I thought I did. I can't find it, though. Oh, Deuteronomy chapter 21. Deuteronomy chapter 21 talks about this idea of washing hands to get rid of so-called guilt. Deuteronomy chapter 21. That's about all the time we'll have today. Beginning in verse 1, Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 1. If anyone is found slain, lying in the field in the land which the Lord your God is giving to you to possess, and it is not known who killed him, Then your elders and your judges shall go out and measure the distance from the slain man to the surrounding cities. And it shall be that the elders of the city nearest to the slain man will take a heifer which has not been worked and which is not pulled with a yoke. The elder of that city shall bring the heifer down to a valley with flowing water, which is neither plowed nor sown, and they shall break the heifer's neck there in the valley. Then the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come near, for the Lord your God has chosen them to minister to him and to bless in the name of the Lord. By their word, every controversy and every assault shall be settled, and all the elders of that city nearest to the slain man shall wash their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken in the valley. Then they shall answer and say, our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. Provide atonement, O Lord, for your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and do not lay innocent blood to the charge of your people Israel, and atonement shall be provided on their behalf for the blood. So you shall put away the guilt of innocent blood from among you when you do what is right in the sight of the Lord. And of course, that was something that was done, you know, ages ago. Yes.
Yeah. He's not innocent.
That's right. That's the big difference. He wasn't innocent. That's true. Well, that's probably a good place to stop. Our time is about up today. There's still some more that happens before Pilate that we'll hopefully, Lord willing, talk about next Sunday morning. Thank you again.